You absolutely can.
And you can pick up some body armor at each of them.
All
body
of them.
Body armor's making a park.
And you can still come and buy tickets online, or you can just come to the Sports Fest coming up this Saturday. You can come from anywhere. There are no rules on where you can come from. A lot of fun people going to be there. I promise, you know, the whole group, you know, this is the first one we did.
Yeah.
And all that. But, like, the group that we pulled together on semi-relatively short notice with everything going on in the world is
we
a very fun
for
group.
Last year, and it hadn't, you know.
Yeah, and
COVID
we had to kind of stop.
It.
And then, yeah, so it's a really fun group. I mean, there's a lot of people know every one of them coming.
Heath Schuler's going to be there.
A lot of fun stuff. I'm going to beat your kids in the quarterback toss.
That's right. Not my kids, because my kid can't throw at the quarter. Can't
no, but hey, but five, you know, 10 years from now, when we do another sports fest, yeah, and we're still kicking butt on this and syndicated all over the state, guess what? I'm going to beat Cooper's butt at the quarterback toss. 45-year-old me. Like, hey, Coop, what's up? Hey, Uncle Ainge, what are you doing, man? I'm just ready to kick your butt at quarterback toss. Grab the little ball. Let's go. Don't step over the line. Don't foot fault. Foot fault, don't do it.
We're going to talk about quarterbacks coming up here in just a few moments. Break down everything about this quarterback battle this year. Ryan Callahan of Govall's 24/7 will join us coming up at 10:30. We will also play a little Florida, Alabama, or Georgia later on. Preview Josh Heupel's opening press conference today. All that and more coming up. Before we get into quarterbacks, Jacob, appreciate you holding through the break. Welcome into the Eric Ainge Show. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning to you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. What's up?
I want to get your take on Texas and Oklahoma. And, Brian, I want to touch on something you mentioned just a minute ago as it pertains to Vanderbilt and their equal share of the SEC pie. But first, Texas and Oklahoma. Are there actually people out there who view that Texas and Oklahoma coming into the league as a bad thing? Because, I mean, I remember when we played Oklahoma in the home-and-home series, I mean, I have friends that flew out to Norman and had a great time and described that atmosphere as an SEC-like atmosphere. And then when we took the lead at Neyland Stadium here in Knoxville into the fourth quarter and had a great chance to beat Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma, that was as an electric of an atmosphere at Neyland Stadium as you'll find. And people are viewing that as a bad thing, Oklahoma and Texas being in the league.
I think I view it as a negative in a different way, in that those teams coming into this conference will make it harder for other teams in the conference, to including Tennessee, to crawl themselves out of the situations that they put themselves in. I think if you're talking SEC type atmosphere, Oklahoma was as close to I've seen in non-conference. But there's also something to be said for those games being special because they were once in a 20-year period type of games, where you're not going to go to somebody's campus like that every so often. We'll see what it's like once they're in the league. Obviously, they make the football in the league better, and obviously they will make more money for the league. Does that translate to being an overall addition when it comes to the selfish interests of teams like Tennessee? I don't know that the answer to that is yes. And I think that's why some people are a bit, slow to accept it because of those reasons and not anything else.
Let me channel my inner Bernie Sanders real quick.
Uh-oh.
I don't know that it's actually there, but we're going to see what happens. Get out of here. I am more worried about everybody else. I'm afraid that all that, like, it's going to turn into football, like the mega conference, and then it's going to be everyone else is exactly the same. Football socialism. They all get the same amount of money. They all play the same kind of games. They all play. It doesn't really matter. And then there's these people that play, and it means the world. It means everything. It just means more.
Yes.
And what about everybody else? That's all. Tennessee football. I don't just watch SEC football. I watch all football. I love – you are the king of Maction, Brian. Tuesday nights, man.
Okay.
Getting weird. Mack it up.
Go ahead.
Let me mention your Vanderbilt scenario, what you said about Vanderbilt, and then I'll hop off and listen to your comment. If I was Vanderbilt's athletic director and the right head coach, as we've seen them have before in James Franklin, you're getting equal share of the SEC pie, but you're obviously for decades not spending it on infrastructure, i.e. a stadium and facilities. If they were to decide that they wanted to build a state-of-the-art stadium and have state-of-the-art facilities. They're already in arguably the best city in the SEC, and they already offer the best education. And with this name, image, and likeness, Vanderbilt has a unique opportunity. They could partner with the music industry and the entertainment industry in Nashville that doesn't exist in anywhere else, and really go after anybody they wanted to and offer the highest recruit in the country, something that no other school could offer if they did it the right way. But, I mean, and that's a scary proposition if you're everybody else. But, I mean, it's probably unlikely because I don't see it happening, but ever, really. But what do you guys think?
No, I think you're right. I think there are people on that campus that have been pushing for it for years to actually take athletics seriously. Every time they get a new chancellor and a new athletics director, to a certain extent, they say that's what's going to happen, and it hasn't happened yet. James Franklin would still be their coach if they had agreed to build more facilities.
James Franklin caught lightning in a freaking bottle. That was the worst Tennessee's ever been. It was the worst Georgia's ever been. It was the worst South Carolina's ever been. They were good the years before that. Like, James Franklin won all the games that he won here, and the worst era. There has not been a period where Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee collectively as a unit have ever been even remotely that bad. Combined. I think he's a good coach, and I think he's had success at Penn State, and I think he will continue. He's a guy who could be good, just good enough, just often enough to never leave there. You know, that's but I do not think that people would, like, if he joined right now, if James Franklin went to Vandy now and they were going to put all the money in the infrastructure, he's getting his butt kicked by most of the teams. And probably he has a much harder time beating us even.
Maybe.
Even now. I just am not a huge James Franklin guy. I think he's all right.
Jager, we appreciate it as
fine.
Always.
He's fine.
Let's set up our discussion on the quarterbacks.
Bring it.
Let me ask you this, because Tyler asked me this yesterday morning when we crossed over. Who is the quarterback battle between? Because in my mind, the quarterback battle is between Milton and Harrison Bailey. And I say that because if Brian Maurer didn't step up and become a part of the quarterback competition in the spring, and Hendon Hooker didn't come in and just say, obviously that guy's better than everybody else, I think you give Harrison Bailey some time, because he was a true freshman last year and he had all the yeah buts
just crap.
That we had.
I mean, I would have sucked last year too.
Right. So
I know I wasn't great, but I mean, I was good enough and I would not have had success.
So we have all that. If one of those other two guys was a factor, would it not already be their job? So that's kind of where I'm at. So am I right that it's between those two guys and they're paying lip service to the other guys and hoping that they surprise them, or is it something else?
I'm with you on that. I think so. Like, watching, let's start with Harrison Bailey.
Okay.
Harrison Bailey last year, with all the crap going on, COVID, and these sound like excuses, but I'm telling you, as someone that has done it, it is not an excuse. It is 1,000,000% legitimate. It is so hard to be a true freshman competing with older players that have, it doesn't matter if they've been in the system or not, and these guys had, but you're competing with guys that already know what to do, and you don't. And you're trying to learn, but then you get COVID or you're in protocol, and then you can't go out, and then you do go out, and then you're getting ready to play a game. He didn't get any, like, meaningful practice snaps until into the season. And even then, he didn't really get any meaningful practice snaps until it was obvious that, like, we didn't have the answer at quarterback.
Yeah, the deck was already stacked against him being
he
a
had
true
no
freshman,
chance.
And then he didn't have training camp. And then he was basically running a scout team until their first off week.
Zero chance. So, that being said, I remember watching him, and the two takeaways that I had, this is just, you know, you don't remember the plays all necessarily, but you remember how it made you feel when you watched it. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot of poise in the pocket. He took the checkdowns on the two-minute drill, which I don't care if you're out there doing it because you want to be – you safe, or if it's because that's what's open and you take it. It's still a hard thing to do when you're a freshman. You go out there, it's like you're all jacked up on Mountain Dew and you want to throw it 80 yards down the field, and he didn't do that. He was calm. He was poised. I remember watching that, especially in that South Carolina game when we brought him in an unwinnable situation, And he did all right. And I remember being like, that's good for me. He did all, he handled that. That a lot of that's not his fault. And then the other takeaway that I had a few games later was, if this kid holds the ball in the pocket for a second one more time, I'm going to go take him out of the game. But I had to remind myself, and I teach quarterbacks this in town, and it's how it was taught to me. The only time you sit there and hold the thing in the pocket when it's collapsing on you and big, giant, scary, grown, blank men are coming to murder your face is if you don't know where to throw it. If you know where to throw it, then you get it out of your hand. When you get it out of your hand, you give your guys a chance to make some yards after the catch. You move the chains. You're playing quarterback then. Getting it out of your hand is the most important thing in being a consistent quarterback. The only way to get it out of your hand and it end up in a reception and not an interception or a tip or whatever is to know where to throw the football on every play against every coverage, and you're winning doubts. You're, I don't know. Oh, crap, I'm not seeing anything. I'm seeing Sam Darnold. I'm seeing ghosts out here. Then knowing where your fail-safe, where do you go in that moment where you have no idea what to do? And he didn't. He took a lot of sacks. And that's, again, normal. If I were coaching him last year, I would have made sure that he, on a few pass plays, in a few different personnel groupings and formations in which we could also run the ball, I would have made sure he knew exactly what to do with the football. Not dialing up the little wheel routes like you hit Jacob Warren on and some stuff like that. You can draw those up in the dirt. That's fine. I mean, let's call a drop back pass that has four guys out on routes, a couple on each side or three by one or whatever you want to do. Know where to throw the football. He didn't know, and I don't blame him. He didn't have hardly any time to do it. And in my opinion, he was coached very poorly. And knowing what we know now about how Jeremy Pruitt was calling a lot of the plays and Jim Chaney's null and void up there, and he's got Chris Winkie trying to teach him where to throw the football when the defensive coordinating head coach is the one calling the plays. Spoiler, that sucks and didn't work. Maybe that's hard for people to fathom. Surely everybody's listening right now going, golly, I am so glad we have anybody but Pruitt. Because I am too. I didn't feel like that forever, but after I hearing all that, like, I can't. So he didn't know what to do. So this year he goes out in spring competing with a couple other guys, new system, did fine. I don't think any of them were bad. I don't think any. Right. Well, that's not true. I watched a couple practices where they were routes versus air, and the ball was staying on the ground over and over and over again. That I had to leave. But still, I think he did fine. I think that Hooker did fine. Maurer was fine. You know, it was all kind of like whatever. Can we win at the level we want to win with what they saw in the spring? I don't think so. So then the only unknown is the other guy. The other guy, Joe Milton, you know, had some success at Michigan. Got a cannon for an arm, I'm told, rivals mine, and I will believe that when I see it. But the person, but you know who I'm talking about. Right. The people that are telling me that had a lot to do with me coming here and know everything about my ability to throw the football. So if the kid's got a hose and he can think at all, then that's something that the other guys don't have. Hooker's got an okay arm and he's pretty athletic. Bailey's got a good arm. He's accurate and he's athletic enough. I'm worried that you have four on, that you're going to have four there and you're not going to have one, which if that's me, darn it, you better find one, or you better find two and they both better play.
So let's take a look at them specifically when we come back. 6569900. If you have questions or comments on Tennessee's quarterbacks, again, Ryan Callahan of GoVols 24/7 coming up at 10:30. We're coming to you live from Food City. Grassy Creek Shopping Center is the new development here where Food City is. Near Western Avenue and Shod Road. Come and see us. We have free tickets to Sports Fest coming up this Saturday. Just walk up and ask. We'll hand you a couple. It's the Eric Haines Show, and it continues next. We will be here until noon, and we have free tickets to Sports Animal Sports Fest thanks to Body Armor, which is the official beverage of Sports Animal Sports Fest. That is this Saturday at the Knoxville Expo Center. If you can't come see us, you can pick up tickets online. But check out our website, 991thesportsanimal.com. There's a link right to SportsFest where you can buy your tickets. It's presented by Visit My Smokies, and you can come and get your free tickets right here at Food City. 656-9900, 866-656-9900. We're talking Tennessee's quarterbacks. So here's the quarterback room, of course. Hendon Hooker came in, transfer from Virginia Tech. Harrison Bailey is a rising sophomore, played last season. Brian Maurer, rising junior, has played limited roles each of the last two seasons. And then, of course, you have Joe Milton, who transferred in from Michigan. Eric Quinn, let's start with Hooker, because right. I think...
That's not a thing that the people ever say to me.
Yes. The tag for him was he's the most consistent. That doesn't mean that he was still the best. No. I have long said, and maybe you'll agree with me, maybe you won't, if this was Josh Heupel's third year and some important decisions were coming, the most consistent might be an important thing. I think in year one, most consistent is not nearly as important as highest ceiling.
I agree. So, like, I do, you know, I watched just transparency. I watched, like, two full practices, probably, in the spring. And I watched him throw, and I was underwhelmed. It is what it is.
Yeah.
It's not my job to be nice to everybody. It's my job to call it like I see it. And I was underwhelmed with how he threw the ball. Now, I also was underwhelmed with how Maurer threw the ball. He's the most inconsistent. Maurer makes throws, and you go, "Woo!" Little kid's 6'2", and little string bean out there, and he can sling it.
Yep.
And then he throws the ball to the other team, and you're like, "And it's 7-7." So, I don't remember Hooker turning the ball over a lot. I don't, but I also remember him missing a lot, and of throws and. Just not really understanding. I'm trying to go into this whole thing with the mindset of I don't think any of them really understood what they were trying to do yet. It was literally the first spring with a brand new coach who has a way of teaching everything from what I can gather and talking to him. They like everybody has a system. Yeah, okay. Well, I don't know that I buy that Heupel has a system. I think he has a way of teaching. And maybe call that a system if you want, I guess. The routes don't have to be anything specific. There doesn't have to be any certain amount of tempo necessarily. It's he has a football offense, you know, 101 that he likes to do. And it's a little harder to take those classes when you're a freshman in college than when you're in your major and you know everything, right? Like, I feel like he's teaching freshman football to all of them. And trying to get a baseline, which I respected and I watched. And I remember thinking, I was talking to a guy over there watching practice. I was like, listen, this is like baby stuff. What are we? And he was like, well, he doesn't want to overload them and go too fast and then them not truly grasp it. And I was like, I can respect that. I can get on board with that. But that means someone has to really get the 101. You got to be good with right. The simple stuff that we're doing right now. We're not good enough at the simple stuff. That's a problem. So that has to get fixed. And I don't know if Joe Milton's the answer, but I think Hooker is athletic enough. I would feel comfortable if he had to come off the bench and we had to put him out there. I feel like Heupel would know what he could and couldn't handle and would try to put him in some situations to make some plays. And yeah, he is athletic and he's big and he can run the ball a little bit. He can take care of some stuff. I mean, if I said right now, gun to the head, Brian, sports animal pin to the head, holding it right on the back of your head.
Okay.
It's your anniversary and everything.
Okay.
You better answer right or you're done.
Okay.
Who you picking? Day one, go. Now, quarterback.
Day one.
Milton. This gun thing I did didn't scare you at all, did
no,
it?
No, not one bit.
Yeah.
There is a much better chance you could bludgeon me to death with that pin than you would actually shoot
What's up,
me
man?
With a fake pin.
I lean that way too, but I also go, but I don't know that he's going to be good enough, fast enough in training camp to make me just like put Bailey to the cast him aside.
I'm going to give you some numbers coming up in a little while on Josh Heupel first year with quarterbacks. Now we did those with Jim Chaney 2 years ago, and this is the only place that he didn't improve them.
At least the head coach here, but if he's calling plays,
well, I'm signing up for that.
Is paid to do that.
So what is Josh Heupel? do and what has he done with quarterbacks? We'll talk about that coming up in a little bit. Ryan Callahan of GoVols 24/7 joins us next to talk Tennessee's newest commit and what the Vols are doing on the recruiting trail next on the Eric Age Show. We will also not blame our buddy Ryan Callahan of GoVols 24/7, who joins us now on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. Ryan Spears each week, thanks to Henley Roofing. Ryan, a big pickup for Tennessee, both figuratively and literally, earlier this week, as Tennessee has a four-star on the offensive line.
No question. One of Tennessee's longtime top targets, Addison Nichols, the four-star offensive lineman from the Atlanta area, Greater Atlanta Christian School down in Norcross, Georgia. Not a surprise that he committed to Tennessee. It seemed to be trending that way for a while, but this is a big, big pickup for Tennessee. And not just because of where he ranks, not just because he's a good player, but because of who you beat out to get him. This is a big-time recruiting battle and really the first, I think, big signature win in a lot of ways for Josh Heupel's staff. He took official visits to Florida, Georgia, USC, and Ohio State in addition to Tennessee. North Carolina ended up being among his final three after an unofficial visit there last month. He really liked USC. I think distance essentially kept them from being more of a factor in the end. But, you know, I think all those schools at different times at least would have taken him. I don't think any of those schools had him down the board or anything like that. So this is a legitimate recruiting win for Tennessee over some big programs and a really good player, as you said, on the offensive line, position of need, and this kind of potentially finishes off a pretty good offensive line class, a fourth offensive lineman in the class, and he's a guy that can play guard or tackle most likely. So you've got a nice player, and you beat out some good competition to do it. So big, big win for Tennessee, and certainly can't take anything for granted, even with a guy that has family ties to Knoxville and Tennessee like he does. They still had to fight hard to get him, and a nice job, I think, by Josh Heupel's staff to get that one done.
Yeah, I like this kid. He's a second-degree black belt. And he's on the golf team. Like this guy, like if I were 18 all over again, him and I would have been best buds. I'd have been trying to beat him up. He would have beat me up. We'd have played golf, play a little football.
You know, his coach kind of emphasized, for a story we did yesterday on GoVols 24/7, that he's just a big athlete. He played basketball before he got into football. He never played football until he was in seventh grade. So he's not a guy who's grown up playing football his entire life. Pretty decent basketball player. I actually went to at least one basketball camp at Tennessee growing up. So he's spent a lot of time with that sport. He does shot put and discus. And obviously, as you said, has taken up golf and pretty good at that. So just a good athlete for a big guy. Moves his feet really well. I think he has good footwork and a pretty good athlete for a guy who's 6'5", 318. So lots of things to like about him. Not just that, too. But what they think he's going to do for Tennessee's culture and rebuilding this program, I think they want the right fits for what they're trying to do, and I think they feel Addison Nichols' personality fits what they're doing, and that he can be sort of a leader for this class as well, kind of joining Taven Jackson as the second four-star in this class who can really kind of carry the flag for Tennessee in recruiting and try to go out there and get some other big names to join him. So we'll see how much he helps in that regard. But I think the thought right now is that he can really be a big difference maker for Tennessee and kind of rebuilding this culture.
So you've got your quarterback for your class. You've got your cornerstone offensive lineman for the class. How much easier does that make it for Josh Heupel to sell to other recruits as the season begins, as things start to kick off, as hopefully, if you're Tennessee, you're showing some progress on offense to say, all right, we're showing you some proof of concept. We're showing you the guy who's going to be your quarterback. We're showing you a guy that's going to block for you up front. Now it's time for you to come jump on the boat as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of credibility is what it is. I think to get a guy like Addison Nichols is instant credibility for this staff that people are buying into what they're doing. You know, that's been one of the things they maybe haven't had as much. You know, Taven Jackson was kind of the big name before Addison Nichols for this class. Now to have more than just your quarterback be a guy who kind of fits that description. You need to be able to, good players want to play with other good players. It's that simple. And I think you need some guys like that to point to for other big-time players to be willing to follow suit. No one wants to be an outlier as kind of an elite prospect in a class. They want to go where they feel like they're joining a lot of talent and can see a bright future. So I think it just makes it, for offensive and defensive players, it just makes it easier for anyone to look at Tennessee and say, I think they might have something going or people are buying into this new staff. Maybe I need to take more of a look at them. And so, Addison Nichols mentioned to me, he didn't want to mention any names, but he said, hey, I've already reached out to somebody that was not interested in Tennessee before, and now they're interested. So I don't know that he's going to bring a lot of people with him necessarily, but I think it gives Tennessee a lot of credibility to have a big name like that especially in the state of Georgia, to go out there and represent Tennessee and give them a big name, a highly ranked guy in this class.
No, and I think 100%. If he's charismatic and smart and witty and all that stuff too, then, gosh, I mean, he could influence some more guys. You know, that's people like the alpha type A. Let's, you know, here's what we're doing, boys, and then they just kind of get on board. If he's one of those guys, and yeah, who knows how many people it actually brings in, but that's not a bad thing to have ever. You know, my thing is, like, we've watched this, Ryan, with every staff that we've had here, and this staff, it took a little longer, and rightfully so, coming off a 3-7 embarrassment, all that kind of stuff, different area recruiting-ish. I know we have some guys on our staff that are great in the Southeastern footprint right here, but still, you're almost seeing now what it looked like more right when people were hired every time we got a new coach. You'd see the buzz, people get excited, we'd get some commits, everything would be okay, and then you play football, and then it plateaus. And then you get the off season, you get a little hype, building, yeah, we got something to pitch, we're selling this, doing that. Football, plateaus. And it makes it hard. Like, I'm glad they're picking up some momentum now, but, I mean, what's it going to look like if we go out there and don't play well this year? I don't know what that means, but, you know, if the vibe is, like, embarrassing or negative or whatever.
Sure, yeah. No, I think it is important to go out there in year one and show some signs of potential. I don't think anyone's going into this season expecting Tennessee to compete for the SEC East Championship. I think the expectations most people have are going to be relatively low, and that's going to make it more manageable for them. But I think you do have to go in and show some signs, especially on offense, that the staff needs, that they're known for their offense, the points they put up at UCF. They need to do more of that this year to sort of to give some credibility to what they're doing, and if they don't have that, that could be a setback. But I think they're pretty optimistic, and we'll see how it plays out. That they're going to go and put an interesting product on the field, be entertaining, fun to watch, put up some points, certainly a lot more than last year. And if it plays out that way, that's going to add to what they've done this summer. But you know, to your point, I think the biggest thing they did, they had a dead period when they first came in. You know, for more than 4 months, they couldn't meet with any prospects in person. It's hard to imagine what that would have done to previous staffs who've had more first-year success at Tennessee. But combine that with an NCAA investigation, it shouldn't be a mystery to anyone why they started off a little slower in recruiting. But to me, the impressive thing is once they've gotten guys on campus and met with them, they've connected with guys. I think the staff that maybe was not full of household names, not much of a known commodity to a lot of the players they were recruiting, especially in the Southeast, They've made a good connection with a lot of these kids. And Addison Nichols, maybe the best example to me. I think there was certainly a time earlier in his recruitment, he probably wasn't going to Tennessee. You know, I think a lot of people might look at him as a guy that was destined to go to Tennessee all along. I don't know that that's the case. I'm not sure the old staff at Tennessee gets him. I think he was very open to going elsewhere. And I think this staff kind of won him over. So that's the impressive thing to me, is summer visits are paying off, and this staff's building the kinds of relationships you have to build to win in recruiting, and they've done a pretty good job this summer with the guys they were able to get on camp.
Ryan, when you look at the rest of the recruiting class and what you're trying to line up for right now, are there other guys that we're watching, or are guys really shutting things down right now for the start of their own season, at least over the next few weeks?
Yeah, it's starting to slow down a little bit, but Tennessee does have some other guys to watch going into their seasons. There are a few guys who start seasons later this month who are still maybe looking to make decisions. One of them might be here locally. You know, we'll find out if this happens, but Walter Nolan, the five-star defensive tackle who's just moved to Powell, he has at least talked about throughout the summer a possible August decision. You know, we'll see if that happens. He hasn't announced the date or anything, but I think that's at least a possibility. Another big-time target, one of Tennessee's top receiver targets, Alec Iomanor from up in Massachusetts, is originally from Canada. He's looking to do something before his season starts, I think around the end of the month. So maybe a mid-August decision for him, and that looks like a, you know, kind of a Tennessee-Stanford battle right now. And there's some other guys that you can't rule out. Another guy that came on kind of back on the radar a little bit more for Tennessee over the weekend, Jeremiah Caldwell, a cornerback target from Michigan, decommitted from Kentucky. Tennessee looks like one of the top contenders for him. You know, we'll see if that one drags on for a while, or if he looks to find a new home fairly quickly, or what happens with that one. That one still could go a number of different ways. So, I think there's some possibilities out there still for Tennessee going into the season. So wouldn't say they're done for the summer yet, but certainly there are a lot of players turning their attention to their upcoming seasons, and I think you'll see fewer fewer commitments certainly over the next few weeks than what we saw during their pretty busy month of July.
You'll have to mention that Tennessee has its first commitment of the next class, 2023, and a guy with a great nickname in White Lightning.
You got to love that. That fits pretty well with Rocky Top, huh? But, Jack Luttrell, the class of 2023 safety from Decatur, Georgia, down in the Atlanta area, another guy that they had on campus multiple times this summer, came up at the end of July or end of June for Tennessee's final camp of the summer and had a pretty nice catch at wide receiver that he tweeted out a video of where he kind of goes back and reaches down over a defensive back and makes a one-handed catch. That was the only rep of the camp he took at wide receiver. The rest of the time he worked at safety. So he's a safety, it looks like, at the next level, but is versatile, has done a lot of different things in high school. He's going to play quarterback for his team this year. He's at a small private school where his dad is the head coach. So he just does a little bit of everything, just a good football player. And, I think Tennessee feels he's another good guy to get in early and kind of, again, carry the flag for the 2023 class, obviously the first commitment in that class. And I think he's got the type of personality, from having a nickname like White Lightning to just being a kind of charismatic kid. I think he's going to be a good representative of Tennessee to kind of go out there and see if he can recruit some other guys to join him. So that's a good start to that class. I think he also likes that he's got some East Tennessee ties. His dad used to be a coach at Carter and grew up in the Knoxville area, and both of his parents played sports at Carson Newman. So, again, you see those Tennessee ties out there. When you have kids out there that have some sort of connection to Knoxville and East Tennessee, I think you've got to take advantage of that. And this staff, with those last couple pickups you mentioned, obviously doing that. We've seen guys with Tennessee ties before choose other schools. It's a big deal when you can actually capitalize on those connections and get those guys to go to Tennessee.
Yeah, the only problem I have with him is the copyright infringement on my nickname. So other than that, he seems like a great player.
No question.
That's what they used to call me?
Yeah.
White.
I'll have him reach out to you about that.
Ryan, there was a truck that drove by here earlier that had a trailer on the back that was real squeaky, and I commented to Jay Leifert, that sounds like Eric Ainge running.
Yeah. Oh, I look like the Tom Brady video. he's got the cheetah.
Yeah, it was
and everything.
About as fast, too.
That was a fantastic video. I hate that I'm starting to really like Tom Brady.
Ryan, what are we watching for over the next 7 days as camp gets started and you guys have the cover to Go Vols 24/7?
Yeah, as you said, tons of coverage of Tennessee's camp getting started, starting with their press conference today. Josh Heupel, his offensive and defensive coordinators, Alex Skolish and Tim Banks, and some players as well, talking today. We'll have full coverage of that. Tennessee's first practice tomorrow morning, full coverage of that, and much, much more, and obviously recruiting coverage. As we mentioned, still some things to watch in the month of August as we go into the season. So it's going to be a busy month of August, and if you're not already on GoVols 24/7, it's a great time to join the site with all that happening and much, much more. So go check it out at govols247.com.
Ryan, we appreciate the time each week. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday when we will have several Tennessee practices already in the rear view to look forward to.
Looking forward to it. Thanks a lot, guys.
It's Ryan Callahan, GoVols 24/7, and he joins us on the Stanley Vincent Gates Hotline. But Eric, his appearance brought to you each week by Henley Roofing.
HenleyRoofing.net, they're the GOATs. Go check them out. Give them a call. Grooms Family, Henley Family, they're out there. If you've been on the Henley Street Bridge, that's what the family name's about. These guys have been building and fixing stuff for literally ever, and they are the roofing, commercial roofing, re-roofing experts in town. HenleyRoofing.net.
And hope that Brittany isn't bad.
Yeah, would love to open up with It's Brittany.
No, there's no Brittany B. I made sure there was no Brittany. Those are all of our favorites. That's all of our favorites, for what it's worth. I'm just throwing that out there. Free Brittany. And free body armor. Well, no, not actually free, but free for me because I went and bought it.
Yeah. Come to Food City. Thanks to our friends at Body Armor. They are the official beverage of Sports Animal Sports Fest coming up this Saturday. Always appreciate Body Armor's support.
When am I supposed to be there again? Noon.
That is when our panel starts. I think you're supposed to be there a little before that.
Yes. Okay. 11.
All right. We talked some quarterbacks. Here's this on Josh Heupel and what he's done with the quarterbacks.
All right.
Now, at UCF, he took over a very good program.
They were smooth.
We'll get to that in a second. At Missouri, in 2015, the year before Josh Heupel got there, they averaged 165.5 passing yards per game.
That's terrible.
And they weren't any better rushing. They only ran for 115.4 yards per game. So it's a very comparable situation to what he's coming into today. Now, he had Drew Locke, who had shown a little bit as a true freshman. He had thrown 1,300 yards. He was okay.
He was fine.
Touchdowns, 8 interceptions.
Yeah, he was still, they were still talking about what a great athlete he was, and he was a basketball player and all that kind of stuff.
His first year with Josh Heupel, the offense averaged 295.4 passing yards. Drew Locke threw for 3,339 yards. More importantly, in my opinion, 23 touchdowns to just 10 interceptions.
Yeah, that's good.
2017, second year with Josh Heupel. The offense averaged 308.6 yards passing, while Drew Locke threw for 3,964 yards, 44 touchdowns, only 13 interceptions.
Very impressive.
Can Josh Heupel have that kind of impact on one of the guys that's on Tennessee's roster?
I think so, but I don't think so this year. I think it'll be like the...
That first-year explosion, though, was pretty big.
I know, but he'd already played a lot. I mean, that's true. All really, honestly, everybody on our team has played a decent amount of football at quarterback. All the quarterbacks on our team have already played a decent amount of football and screwed up a lot.
Yes.
And that is part of it. Drew Locke, 4 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. That is very, very common. I don't anticipate that just because I think that we are going to have some other struggles, and I don't think we have on the roster right now a first, second round caliber draft pick, which Drew Locke was. I mean, that's right.